Okay. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate everybody's time and the effort you've put in to get started on your measure evaluation. I think we'll start off with a quick roll call. I'll first start with the TAP members. Jan Allison?
Yes, I'm present.
Hi, Jan. Sue Barnes?
I'm here.
Hi.
Hi.
Brian Fennerty? Juan Sanchez?
I'm here.
Hi.
Great.
Carolyn Scott?
Here.
Thanks. Kathleen Squires?
I'm here, and I just wanted to let you know I'm actually in the website.
Great.
People wanted to try again.
All right. Pat Stone?
Here.
Thank you. And Peter, I heard you earlier.
Yep, I'm on.
I should explain that Dr. Daryl Campbell was unable to meet to make this first call. He'll be on the call tomorrow. He's the chair, and Pat Stone has graciously agreed to direct the call in his stead today.
And Andrew, who's all sitting in the room there on the NQF staff side?
Yeah, I should. In the room here, I'm Andrew Leisinga. I have with me Elisa Muntali, Jessica Weber, Lindsay Tai, and Karen Pace. And I believe we have Heidi Bosley on the line. Heidi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Heidi. And as well, Helen Burstyn.
She'll be joining us if she hasn't joined already. She will.
Okay. Nah, this is Del Conyers. I'm on the line as well.
Oh, hi, Del. Thanks.
And Helen Burstyn has also joined.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hi, everyone.
So I thought I'd just start with a quick statement of what the purpose of this call is, which is to give to go through an in-depth discussion of the measures you've been assigned, that you've been given in the week prior to this call, and to evaluate those measures, to give a good thorough discussion of them in the context of the evaluation sub-criteria, which you should have in your briefing memo as well as in the SurveyMonkey that you completed. And we can pull those up if you need to have any questions about them or would like to just take a look at them in detail as we go through the call. So before we get started, I guess I should ask if there are any overall questions about the evaluation sub-criteria or about the process or anything anybody wants to bring up before we sort of jump in here. Oh, are we good?
Yeah, it's Peter. I think we are good, and just for the group, we will use that measures evaluation criteria pretty strongly all the way through. So obviously discussion should be free and free-flowing, et cetera, but on occasion we'll just put a check on the group's deliberations based on the criteria. But
yeah, okay. And I should also explain that our plan is not to come to a final vote on this call, but rather we'll have a discussion of each measure in depth. We'll try to bring up the issues surrounding each measure, any strengths, weaknesses, build a consensus around the measure. But then we will be voting subsequent to the call. We'll send out another online survey tool, and that is when the final vote will occur, not on the call itself. So that information will be forthcoming.
And this is Karen. Just to clarify again, the voting will be still on the sub-criteria ratings. The TAP is really charged to give the steering committee their evaluation of how well the measure meets the sub-criteria, as well as information about the strengths and weaknesses related to those. So it'll basically be the same process, but after the full discussion, and of course if there are any requests for additional information, so that you would have that prior to registering your final rating.
Karen, this is Pat Stone. Now, Daryl Campbell is going to be representing the TAP at the steering committee, I'm assuming?
That's correct.
And will how will he be, I guess you will inform him of the discussions for today?
We will, and it might be a good idea for us to put you in touch with each other as you guys chatted briefly last week, and maybe we can arrange a phone call between you two to just run over what happened on the first day, and we'll talk it over with him as well and give him a summary of the
Okay. And then one other sort of process issue.
Sure.
If some of the stewards provide additional information, will the – and so we've been getting some additional information in the last day, you know, over
– Yeah.
You know. When will we be voting and, you know, when will we be looking at this additional information or –
Yeah, that's something that we may have to kind of feel out as we go through the call and we determine what sort of what kinds of questions we have for the measure developers, what additional information we need, what gaps we think that they will be able to fill fairly easily. And then if we need to, we will may give a few days for them to add that additional information, and then subsequent to that, do the vote on the measures with the supplemental information included.
Okay, great. Thank you.
No problem. And Peter, did you want to just talk a little bit about the background of the project, just, you know, for a few minutes?
Well, I'm assuming everyone was, again, on the orientation call.
Yeah, we've had the orientation call, so we
everybody
has probably got a good sense of the background. So should we just jump right in?
Yeah, there's a lot of work here. It's a high-intensity project, so unless someone has a burning question or comment, let's just get at it.
Okay. We do have on the agenda here the disclosures of interest. I didn't hear that Ann Hammersmith had joined on the call yet. She was actually not scheduled until 12:30. We didn't actually have a lot to cover in this first overview section, so we're running slightly ahead of schedule. But we'll have somebody run over there and see if she can just join us quickly to do the disclosures. Sure. And just a little bit about the process of the call. Our plan is to have the measure developers give just a brief a statement about each measure before we get started in our discussion. They'll have just a few minutes to explain their measure and to give, you know, any details or additional information that they want to provide. And then we'll get into each measure, which we will evaluate separately one at a time. And we've, again, as you saw in the memo in our previous emails, we've assigned several discussion leaders for each measure. So we would ask those who've been assigned a measure to sort of jump in and lead the discussion to talk about, in your own reviews of the measure, what strengths and weaknesses you found or any issues that you think need to be highlighted, and we can just sort of jump off the discussion from there as we go along.
And the other thing is it's just important, although there are assigned discussion leaders, that we really want the full TAP to be engaged in the discussion about the measures, and because the full TAP will be making ratings on all of the measures.
So we've just been joined by Ann Hammersmith, who's the general counsel here at NQF. And she will just give a little spiel, I think, on disclosure of interest and ask everybody to go around and say a bit. She'll explain more.
Hi, this is Ann Hammersmith, I'm NQF's general counsel. This is the part of your meeting where we do conflict of interest disclosure. If you recall, we asked you to fill out a form where you disclose interests that you might have that might be relevant to your service on this committee. So what we're going to do now is ask you to go around the virtual table and disclose anything that you feel your fellow committee members should know. You do not have to recount your CV. We don't expect you to do that. But just in the spirit of openness and transparency, reveal anything about your background that you believe is relevant to your service on this committee. So I'm going to call your name, and then I'll ask you to tell us who you are with and then if you want to make any disclosures. Jan Allison. Is she on the call?
I believe Jan is on the call. Jan, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. I had my phone on mute.
That's okay.
I thought I unmuted, but it didn't do so effectively. I am an RN for 30 years, and I am with Surgical Care Affiliates. We're a company that owns approximately 130 ambulatory surgery centers and surgical hospitals across the country. And I'm sorry, I kind of missed. Did you need to know anything else about me?
Is there anything that you want to disclose? Do you think that you have any conflicts of interest?
No, I do not have any conflicts of interest.
Okay, thank you. Sue Barnes.
Hi, I'm the national leader for infection prevention and control for Kaiser Permanente, and I don't have any conflicts to disclose.
Okay, thank you. Juan Sanchez.
Hi, I'm a cardiothoracic surgeon at St. Mary's Hospital in Waterbury, Connecticut, and I have no conflicts of interest.
Thank you. Carolyn Scott.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Scott. I'm the Vice President for Performance Improvement and Quality at Premier, and I have nothing to disclose.
Okay. Kathleen Squires.
Hi, I'm a professor of medicine at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia, and I'm director of the Division of Infectious Diseases, and I don't believe I have any conflicts to disclose. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. Patricia.
Hi, I'm a professor of nursing and nurse health services researcher at Columbia University, and I have used both the NHSN measures and the ARC measures as outcome measures in my study and actually in my studies that have been federally funded, and actually was cited in one of the applications, but I don't think that's a conflict of interest.
Okay, thank you. Now that we've completed your disclosures, I want to give you the opportunity to ask each other any questions you might have or if you have any questions of me. Does anybody have any questions or anything they'd like to discuss regarding disclosures? Okay, I'll take the silence as no. Thank you very much for participating.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Hi, this is Karen Pace again. And before you get into the specific measures, I just want to provide the opportunity again to have you mention any difficulties you may have had in addressing the evaluation criteria so that if there are any questions, we can clear those up at the beginning and get everybody on the same page. So just want to take a minute and see if there were any problems or issues or questions that occurred to you as you were trying to evaluate the measures.
Hi, this is Kathleen Squires. I don't have any specific questions. I have to say this is the first time I've done this. I've been on study sections and so forth, so this is kind of a different way of looking at things. So I just want to apologize in advance if my comments are diffuse, but aim to learn.
Okay.
Great.
That's fine.
Kathleen, this is Pat Stone. This is the second time I've been on one of these. That's why they asked me to help. And it is different than a study section, but sort of feels the same way. But it'll be okay. When you have questions, just bring them up, and they'll help you through it.
Thanks.
Okay. Now I just realized we had anticipated considering the two ARC measures for bloodstream infections first. That was in anticipation of us starting at 12:40, which is when the ARC folks would be able to join us. They had a call that they were on previous to that. So maybe what we should do is start with the one that's listed first, and hopefully we have some CDC folks on the line who can join us and give a short explanation of their measure and anything they want to cover related to that. Can we, operator, can we ask if we have any representatives from the CDC online?
And if you are from the CDC, please press star 1 at this time.
I have a question for you, Andrew. This is Pat Stone again.
Sure.
There's
with the way these measures are, you know, the ARC measures and the CDC measures, there's, and I know that there's similarities and the differences, but the similarities conceptually are about the outcome, but the methods and the measures, because they're sort of similar, are about what goes into the measure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to, for that reason, I just want to make sure, I'm sure everybody else thought about this, but, you know, it'll be hard. We'll have the sort of same questions, I think, probably about a lot of the different measures, you know, for both the ARC and the CDC, even though we're going to do them conceptually by the infection type.
Right. I think that's likely as well. And that's something we can sort of talk out as we go through the measure.
Right. And, Ms. Karen, just again to remind you, we talked a little bit about this last week, but in terms of similar measures, again, as Pat pointed out, each measure should be evaluated independently against the criteria. Eventually, if multiple measures, you know, could be recommended by the steering committee will ultimately have to choose the better way to measure the particular concept if they really are competing measures. And that's where the TAPS, identification of strengths and weaknesses and the ratings will ultimately assist the steering committee in making those decisions.
So, Pat, or I guess it was Sue Barnes, maybe we should just sort of get started in our discussion of the measures, see what sorts of issues we can identify first before we are even joined by the measure developers. And if I could ask the operator to let us know when anybody from CDC or ARC joins the line, and then we can kind of pull them in at that point. But, again, I believe it was Sue Barnes, who was assigned to the as the primary discussion leader for PSM 00110, the National Healthcare Safety Network Central Line Associated Bloodstream Infection Measure.
Okay, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
I think I was assigned along with Dr. Squires and Pat.
Yeah, we had several people. So,
I don't know if Pat, since you're more experienced with these TAPS, if you want to take the lead on this or if you want me just to dive in.
We were going to get a overview of the measure from the CDC, so why don't you just provide an overview, and then the way I don't know how other people wanted to do it, but the way I thought we might be a good way to do this is just to go once we have a sort of an overview of what the measure is, then we could go through the sort of the main, you know, conditions for consideration and make sure everybody sort of talks about that, and then the importance to measure and report. You know, go through each one of the sections and let everybody talk about that. If that's okay and sounds reasonable to everybody else.
You don't need to talk about the conditions too much, but you can.
Yeah.
You know, talk
sure.
A little bit.
Sure. So, do you want to give an overview of the measure?
Sure. So this is the CLABSI measure from NHSN measuring central line bloodstream infections in ICU, adult ICU, and NICU. And that, as a starting point, I think needs to be in the title to make sure that we're clear. So that would be just one observation. So the measure is looking at the number of central line associated bloodstream infections over the total number of line days times 1,000, and then they propose the proposed ultimate measure is a standardized infection ratio, which is looking at observed over expected. And I don't know if you need more detail than that.
Well, yeah, so let's talk about it a little bit. The observed over expected is they're sort of weighting the expected by the each ICU or type or the ward or the NICU. So that sort of goes into the formula for it.
Okay. As far as the overview of the measure, is there anything else that we should share?
No. Does anybody else have any questions about it?
Right. So now you could just start going through the criteria under importance and then scientific the sub-criteria under importance, scientific acceptability, et cetera.
Okay. So importance to measure, which I understand is a go, no-go. In other words, if we don't have acceptance or approval of this criteria, then we can't go any further.
Well, let me just stop you there. Again, the charge to the TAP is to evaluate each of the sub-criteria. So you'll be giving information rating on the sub-criteria, and it will be the steering committee that makes that ultimate decision about whether importance will be met or not. So really focus all of your discussion and your rating of the sub-criteria.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. Okay. So, I didn't have any comments. What I did was gather comments from my constituency groups and then provided my own personal comments as well. For 1A, the measure focus addressing a specific national health goal, demonstrating high impact, demonstrating quality problems, focusing on an outcome that is relevant or associated with a national goal. One, all of those criteria to me were met. I had no comments. How about anyone else in the group? 1A and B and C, I had nothing to offer. Seems like it's well met.
I agreed.
Yeah, I agree.
And Jessica, you want to put the evaluations online up. Also, as those of you who are online, I'm not sure how many of you are, but Jessica, we're displaying the ratings that were submitted online. And so, again, you can kind of identify if there are areas where there seems to be differences of opinion. Those are the ones we really want to focus on as well. But I think what you just said kind of is reflected in the ratings that were submitted online.
Yeah, as you can see in the sort of upper left-hand corner there, the columns L, M, and N reflect the ratings given by the reviewers in the online tool, and we have a pretty high degree of consensus there. 8-0 on 1A, 7-1 completely, partially on 1B, and then 7 completely for 1C.
Okay, so any additional discussion or comments on 1A through C? Then I'm going to move to 2A.
Great.
And, pardon me?
Oh, I just said great.
Okay, and this is the measure is well-defined and precisely specified so that it can be implemented consistently within and across organizations and allow for comparability. I had a comment from my groups, and I'm not sure if this is the appropriate place for it or not, but that the SIR versus rate, it may be a challenge in order to align with what is already reported according to mandated legislation, state-based legislation, where rates are requested as opposed to SIR. This could provide an unintended consequence of an overwhelming data burden for those who are not members of NHSN where this calculation is automatic.
So I think that might go into sort of the feasibility portion, but right now I think we should talk about the numerator, specifically about the numerator and denominator details.
Okay. So any comments on numerator or denominator?
This is Carolyn. I think there was some ambiguity around the time window on both the numerator and the denominator.
It says
the time window will be a period greater than monthly. Well, I'm not really sure what that means.
What I think it means, and this is what will be helpful when the CDC folks get on the call, is the NHSN, you know, it grew out of NIST, and they've always done monthly rates. So I think they're sort of thinking that, you know, this is not going to be monthly and that, you know, people could create their own database. But they don't say that here. It just says a period greater than monthly. That's probably reasonable, seeing that these infections are going down lower, but I guess it's not specified. Totally was my feeling, and hence I think I gave it a P, partially met.
I think until that's clarified, the ability to say that this could be implemented, like, in a standard fashion across all hospitals is, I don't know how we can do that.
Yeah, you'd think there needs to be some, you know, I agree. Yeah, it's not clear enough about the time frame. And hopefully, you know, that'll be a question that we can have for the CDC folks when they join us. Maybe they can clarify or add some other documentation or something.
And I did want to let you know we did have Dan Pollack join from the CDC.
Okay, great. So we could actually just bring him on in and have him give his overview if he is ready to do that.
I am ready. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Your line is open.
Dan. This is Pat Stone. And just to let you know, we did get started. Sue Barnes has presented a little bit of it, and we were just now starting to talk. You know, we all said that, you know, for the first criteria, it's clearly is important, and we're now just starting to talk about the numerator and denominator. Maybe you would, you know, could get up to speed.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry we were following the timetable that was sent to us.
Yeah, we ran a little
bit. We were quick.
Then we tried getting on the call, and we were on mute or something for a period of time, eager to get into the conversation with you. But thank you for the opportunity. So I'll be very quick. In terms of an overview of the measure, which I would like to just perhaps retrace some steps, but I'll be quick about it. The Central Line Associated Bloodstream Infection Measure proposal is indeed tied to mandatory reporting. NHSN, our system for monitoring healthcare-associated infections, National Healthcare Safety Network, is a system in which over 2,700 healthcare facilities in 50 states report HAI data to CDC, including facilities in 21 states that report HAI data as part of a state mandate. All 21 states that use NHSN as the operational system for their reporting mandates require CLABSI reporting. In addition, decision was made by the Center for Medicaid and Medicaid Services and announced actually late last week to begin requiring CLABSI reporting via NHSN to CMS for all Medicare-eligible hospitals participating in the Inpatient Prospective Payment System pay-for-reporting program. So a de facto federal mandate for CLABSI in accordance with the data requirements of NHSN will be going into effect beginning with hospital discharges on January 1st of 2011. To recap the data reporting requirements, the CLABSI infection measure calls for enumeration of numerator events, which are defined in accordance with NHSN criteria for healthcare-associated, laboratory-confirmed bloodstream infections that are not secondary to an infection site elsewhere in the body. Central line associated bloodstream infections are those in which a central line or umbilical catheter was in place at the time of the event or within 48 hours before its onset. So there are clear criteria that we use and that we train people to use in identifying the cases. The enumeration of numerator events is for intensive care units and neonatal intensive care units, which we formerly referred to as high-risk nurseries. So there's a need to not only detect but also attribute to a location, and we have rules for doing that as well. Then on the denominator side, there is enumeration of the central line device days in each hospital location, ICU or NICU, for example, under CLABSI surveillance during the same time period used for the infection events. Now, we have a reason why data was reported by healthcare facility location, or as we'll talk about later on, by procedure category in the context of SSI. CLABSIs and central line device days are reported by unit location because the incidence of the infection events is known to differ substantially by type of unit, which in turn reflects underlying differences in patient groups that may influence infection risk. So we capture the information by location, and we analyze and make it available by location. And those metrics are used for comparative purposes to drive prevention efforts at the facility level, state level, and now we think at the national level. We joined the call as you were beginning to talk about the SIR, the standardized infection ratio, as the summary metric. The proposed CLABSI measure that we've submitted calls for statistical summarization using the SIR. That's a metric that enables comparisons between the HAI experience observed in a healthcare facility with the HAI experience that would be expected in that facility from the HAI data aggregated nationally by NHSN. The aggregate national data provide a standard population for comparative purposes. The observed to expected ratio can be applied to individual locations within healthcare facilities and also can be used to combine experience across multiple locations in a single summary metric. And for public reporting purposes, there may indeed be significant advantages to using a summary metric like SIR. For one thing, because it enables the experience of multiple locations to be summarized in a single metric, it provides a single statistic that can be used by those who are interested in public reporting to understand the experience of a healthcare facility compared to the national expectations for a facility that would be a similarly situated facility reporting from the same unit types. So it has some important communication advantages for public reporting purposes. It can drive prevention efforts by virtue of the ease with which it can be monitored longitudinally and at different geographic levels. We've actually used SIR in the past for some of the infections that are under surveillance through NHSN. In the public reporting era that we're clearly in, we are making a concerted effort and working closely with states to move to summarizing data using the SIR. We're also talking with CMS about implementing the new IPPS, Inpatient Prospective Payment System, pay-for-reporting rule using SIR. The next point is why the time window for applying the SIR may differ between locations or healthcare facilities. We don't, in our measure submission, specify a measurement interval, and this is the reason. In some locations or facilities, a longer time period of CLABSI surveillance may be necessary to produce a meaningful SIR compared to other locations or facilities. For example, for a SIR to be meaningful, the number of central line days reported for a specific location should be expected to be associated with at least one infection based on the aggregate national data. If a fraction of infection would be expected, the result is not meaningful, and a larger sample size is needed to produce meaningful results. So to an extent, what should be reported is determined by the sample size, and we will, as we have done in the past already, not report SIR results if the sample size is not producing a meaningful result. Reliability. The capacity of NHSN to provide a reliable national standard referent population for comparative purposes is predicated on first use of a single set of case criteria endorsed by NQF and previous consensus processes and used by states and now CMS for mandatory or de facto mandatory reporting purposes. Two, centralized training and user support for those case criteria, attribution criteria, and three, aggregation and analysis of an extensive amount of AGI experience reported by healthcare facilities to NHSN and the predecessor system, the National Nosocomial Infection Surveillance System. Lastly, validity. States using NHSN as their operational system for mandatory Class C reporting have reported validation studies, and most of the initial results provide confirmatory findings about the CLABSI data. We see no clear evidence or pattern of systematic underreporting of CLABSI.
Dan, but that's for the CLABSI, not for the SIR, right?
Well, the two are really the same. For purposes of validation, what we're validating are the numerator and the denominator data.
Except for if you're expecting that manual, that calculation to be made manual for those locations not participating currently with NHSN, you might not see that.
Well, that's true, but then we're really talking about an arithmetic error.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that that's a real challenge that we need to think about.
Well, and we would agree that, you know, having tools to safeguard against that is very important. So one of the benefits of the CMS IPPS rule is that now virtually all hospitals in the country will be joining NHSN and participating in CLABSI reporting through NHSN and will have available to them tools within NHSN to calculate SIR. So we can look forward to moving out of a zone where there may be risk of arithmetic error that would call the data into question from the validity vantage point.
Absolutely, eventually.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's right around the corner. I mean, the IPPS rule will go into effect with hospital discharges beginning January 1st, 2011. And that means that hospitals will be obligated to begin reporting that first quarter's data, January, February, March data, within the time frame that CMS sets for quality measure reporting as part of this program. So by a year from now, hospitals will, virtually all hospitals in the United States will be enrolled and participating in NHSN if the pattern of participation in the CMS program is consistent from what it has historically been.
Right. And just to clarify, this is Karen again, that would be kind of an implementation and feasibility issue versus if people follow the specifications as laid out, the indication that is suggested is that can produce a reliable data. But I think the issue you bring up relates to feasibility, and one of the items there is about, susceptibility to inaccuracies and errors, and that's certainly a consideration, but it sounds like that's something that would be addressed when it was actually fully implemented.
Well, we expect it will be, and I think you put it quite well, when fully implemented. The first year of the CLABSI reporting via NHSN to the CMS annual payment update program will not be associated with the validation component of that program. That will be invoked in the subsequent years. But we are working closely with states already to further both the methodology and the reporting of validation studies. There have been five states that have reported CLABSI validation studies already, and we're funding multiple additional states through ERA funds that we've dispersed a year ago to foster HAI surveillance programs, HAI surveillance and prevention programs
okay.
in states.
So I think we'll stop there and have the TAP continue through their evaluation and the measure developer is there if you have questions, but we'll leave this time now for the TAP. And it may be that we need to ask you to actually submit some of that testing results that you were just mentioning. But we'll go ahead and resume the TAP discussion now.
So I think that Dr. Pollack addressed the question that was posed right before he dialed in, which is the data collection period greater than monthly kind of being ambiguous and the reason for that. Are there any other questions around the 2A criteria for importance to measure?
No, Sue, that seems clear to me.
Okay, so then I think we can move on to scientific acceptability. And so I have one, I have nothing except for about a question around the SIR, and I'm not sure if others in the group have comments. Maybe we can look online and see what do we have the results up on the screen.
Scientific acceptability for which one are you thinking of?
The measure is well-defined and precisely specified.
That's 2A.
2A, sorry.
If you want to look on the screen here, we've got that up in column P, which is highlighted.
I had no comments on that, and I wonder if anyone else in the TAP has comments or concerns?
Well, we do have an N that says not at all. We have and we do have some P's that say partially. I think that really is to the sort of this, what is the time frame and what is statistically, what would make a meaningful measure. I don't know how others feel. I'm sort of certain the CDC can do it, but I'm not certain it's been explained in this application of what that is. Is it, you know, does anybody else have from the TAP have any other ideas? Or
I have a question about the units. This is Juan Sanchez. Obviously, when you introduce the SIR, you're now doing a very crude risk adjustment methodology, and I don't know if you want to discuss this at this point, or I see that's 2A, 12 through 13, but how granular is the data for each unit? For example, are bone marrow transplant units going to be grouped into regular units? Does it unfavorably bias tertiary medical centers that have specific units which attract high-risk individuals? It wasn't clear to me from the measures how granular that data is.
Dan,
yes,
would you like to answer that?
Sure.
About how the?
Well, we encourage a granular level of data collection, reporting, and analysis. So we have a system for classifying hospital locations by unit type, and we're able to get down to the level of specific types of intensive care units and specialty care units.
When you calculate an expected rate, is it that specific, or is it more of an aggregate number?
Is that specific?
For each, so a hospital may have a large number of SIRs for different units.
It can, and we're able to capture that and include that if the unit experience is summarized across units. So that summary statistic takes into account the different types of units and the AGI experience in each of those units that the hospital is reporting.
Well, let's take an example where a hospital, one academic medical center, has a regular medical intensive care unit and a bone marrow transplant unit. Another hospital puts both of those patients in the same unit.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not comparable hospitals, in my mind, according to this criterion.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that that's true. There are those differences. We're in a situation where, in order to capture that, we would need to collect additional risk factor data on the patient level.
But that's not part of this measure now.
No, it's not. And it's but it is it raises this larger question. It raises. And let me also make one other.
Sure.
Put another piece of information in there. In order for a unit to be classified as a medical intensive care unit, 80% of the patients in that unit would need to be classifiable as medical ICU patients rather than as bone marrow transplant patients. So we do have some internal criteria for what constitutes a unit. Now, it could be that there are a handful of bone marrow transplant patients beyond that 80% of the typical medical ICU population. And you're absolutely right. We have no way with the system as it's set up right now to capture that additional handful of patients and to incorporate the risk that they might have that would differ from the other patients in that unit. But again, this is the classic problem of how much risk factor data to be collected, which adds burden in order to differentiate that type of unit blend from another mix of patients.
But the other side of that burden is that you're going to publicly, announce this information and may penalize different institutions because of the way they've set up their, their units and so on. So, I mean, there are burdens on both sides.
Well, we know that, and we are very keen on being able to better differentiate patients and capture additional data as those data become available in sources that are less burdensome. And we're glad to work with the facilities to set up and identify the appropriate unit types to be reporting within NHSN. So that's part of the training and user support that we described earlier, where we're poised to be able to provide that level of technical assistance.
Can I ask also if you wouldn't mind explaining how the weight classification or stratification of NICU CLABSI is, addressed with the SIR?
Different weight categories.
Teresa, you want to handle that?
Sure. Hi. The birth weight or all of the data for the NICUs are stratified by currently 5 birth weight strata. And so rates are calculated within each of those strata in the different NICU types. And then SIRs would be calculated for each of the birth weight strata in a NICU.
Okay. Hi, Teresa. This is Sue Barnes.
Oh, hey, Sue.
This is Karen Pace again, and this is something we'll probably have to get back to the measure developer on, because we don't really have any information about all these different units that you're categorizing.
I think that they, within their data, they do talk about that they have the 80% to identify each unit. Unfortunately, the example that they have is one ICU and one ward, and they didn't even label the type of ICU, so you don't get a sense of the, in the example, that the SIR would be weighted by different types of ICUs.
Right, but we would need to know all of those different classifications of ICUs that are,
I think that data was given.
Yeah, those are posted on the website. I'm pretty sure we included a link to those attachments.
We absolutely did.
Right, and what I'm saying is it needs to actually be in the measure specification, so we'll work with you on that.
Okay. Just for everybody to know, I'm trying to make sure everybody's questions are answered in this. I know we'll go through each one of the measures, but I think that this is the first SIR. I don't think that we'll have as many questions with other SIRs, so if those of you are worried about time, sort of bear with me that we make sure we understand this well.
This is Kathy Ellenbritz, and I just wanted to add that when we work with facilities that are trying to identify their types of locations, we often will even suggest that they divide a location into more than one type, that they're able to do that with their numerators. And so that gets down to further granularity and gets into those situations, that addresses those situations that you're talking about.
Okay. Okay, so Ed, any more questions on sort of the numerator-denominator? Stu, do you want to bring us up to the next bit?
So then that takes us to 2B under scientific acceptability, and this is reliability testing. I did not have any comments, and I'm looking to see up on the screen whether there were any issues. And anyone in the group have concerns or issues or questions?
No, I didn't. I did not. Did anybody else?
Okay. Then 2C is validity testing, and again, I had nothing to offer from either my personal comments or my constituency groups, and I wonder if anyone in the group has comments or issues.
I think the submission indicated that the validity studies were just going to be beginning in July 2010.
It did, and I, you know, and this is Pat. What I thought was, because I've used these measures in my own research, but so this gets down to what's really out there, is that everybody in all the literature I ever read said the CDC measures are the most valid, you know, and it is the same sort of numerator and denominator, although that's from the basic CLABSI, you know, in this SIR. So I understand that there's some validity testing due to the growth to NHSN, but I actually thought it was much stronger than what they had written here. I don't know if anybody wants, you know, they are undertaking validity studies, but, you know, in my own research, I've cited the validity of the NHSN data. So I don't know. Do you want to comment on that?
I think isn't the validity testing around the SIR, though?
Well, later on, they talk about that they're actually using the SIR in other places, in other states have already been using it. It just says C section 2C2. I don't know. Analytics.
But they're going to enhance this somewhat. Maybe they want to enhance that because that in the face of what we were asked to look at.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And the evaluation criteria allow for reliability and validity testing at either the data element level or at the measure score level. So, and I think they've been talking primarily about the data element level, but that is acceptable under our criteria.
All right. Any other discussion around 2C validity testing? Then I'm moving to 2E for outcome measures and other measures. This is an outcome measure. In evidence-based risk adjustment strategy is specified and based on clinical factors.
Yeah, I think we sort of went over that. Are there more questions about that?
Okay, great. Then 2F, data analysis. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Did we skip the exclusions justified?
Yeah, we did. And it says that there are certain devices used in a manner similar to central lines will be excluded as they do not meet the NHSN definition of a central line. Peripheral IVs are excluded. Did anybody have a problem with their exclusion criteria?
I think when you compare some of the other things that we were looking at, not to necessarily compare and contrast, some of the other submissions really went in and did a lot of work around the citation for the evidence of why those would be excluded, and I just didn't know if this was enough, that statement right there.
Yeah, you know, and that's, I think that's, this is the difference between a study section and NQF CAP. It's different. think it's about the definitions. Are they clear? I don't know. Karen, do you want to say, or Andrew, do you want to say anything on that?
This is Karen. Right. The question here is whether the exclusions are justified in the evidence, or if you guys have questions about whether the exclusions are justified. We're just trying to make sure that exclusions can kind of get out of hand in some cases, and so it's really just a matter of whether this panel of experts feels that the exclusions that have been identified, first of all, under the specifications are understandable and clear, and then second of all, if you have any questions under 2D, whether there are any questions about whether those things really should have been identified as exclusions.
Any further discussion on that? So, sounds like we're good with the exclusion criteria as written. So then next, 2F, data analysis demonstrates that methods for scoring and analysis allow for identification of statistically significant, practically, clinically meaningful differences in performance. Any discussion or concerns?
No, I thought it was very strong that they're already using this measure in some states. To me, that's a real strength.
Anyone else? Okay. Then to 2G, if multiple data sources and methods are allowed, there is demonstration they produce comparable results. And so any concerns or discussion there?
There isn't multiple data allowed here.
So, how I interpreted that was manual versus automated.
I think everybody that would do this would have to do it in HSN.
Right, but there is an option of manual upload, or that's being considered, versus.
Oh.
I don't know if that really makes a difference, but I wanted just to raise that as an issue, an observation.
Yeah. So this is Dan Pollack at CDC. We have a feature already available for use that enables uploads of data for both the numerator and the denominator of the CLABSI measure. And this is an industry standard file format that has been specified in accordance with the NHSM data requirements and business rules, and is already in use since last December in multiple facilities for purposes of reporting CLABSI data to NHSM.
Using data mining software, right?
Well, no. It is using the same protocol. The stipulation is that the infections must be identified in accordance with the NHSN protocol.
No, but I mean, the source is not directly from the EMR, but it's from?
It's from infection control surveillance systems in commercial use.
Okay.
So to obviate the need to do manual data entry not only into those systems but also into NHSN, we've worked with those systems to provide technical specifications and implementation guidance to configure those systems so that the data can be uploaded to NHSN.
And I think that's really critical as we're looking at inadvertent diversion of resources for all the public reporting requirements. That automation is the way to go, but I think it's also important to just acknowledge, not that this is going to affect this measure, but it could, that there may be differences in the quality of data when there's a manual input versus an auto upload, just because of the human factor.
But those are important things. I think the resource use, that there is a part that we talk about that later.
Okay.
But I do think that, and I don't know, Karen, is there a difference when you're looking at the same data element when one is done electronically and the other one is you put?
Not really. This particular item really relates to, the description we just heard sounds like it's the same information. It's just whether it's first entered into a surveillance system that can then correspond to the NHSN or whether it's directly input into the NHSN. It's the same process for identifying and applying the definitions. What we're trying to get at here is if there were totally different specifications, for example, for using administrative claims data. And then the question would be, if you're using administrative claims data versus infection surveillance data, would you end up with comparable results? So I think the issue that's brought up, again, is one of those implementation issues and feasibility rather than directly related to this criterion.
Okay, great. All right.
You know, and just some feedback for the folks at NQF, you may want to help clarify that because I interpreted it differently as I read the online question to respond to.
Okay.
I did it more on, like, hey, if it was a manual versus an automated, is there any way to tell if the results would be
true? Sure, thank you.
And I think that, you know, as a community, it's really important to, in terms of resource allocation for IPs, to look at automation wherever possible, and it may be that the quality of the data is not going to be as great, but, you know, in the short term, in the long term, it will be. But, back to the question of data sources, I think maybe we need to, there may be a need or a benefit to permitting either way, administrative or, you know, traditional surveillance when we're talking about automation.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think for this measure, let's stick with this measure and
okay.
Go forward.
All right. Any other discussion on 2G? Then we're moving to 2H. So this talks about if disparities in care have been identified, measure specifications and scoring and analysis allow for identifications of those disparities through stratification.
Yeah, and there wasn't much here about disparities such as, you know, certain patients, certain socioeconomic status or race, ethnicities, you know, getting more HAIs than others. I don't think the measure deals with that, you know, maybe the difference between a teaching hospital and non-teaching, or you know, but I thought it was okay, but there's nothing really here.
Okay. Anyone else?
But I just think that the disparity question can also be addressed with, you know, more granularity of data. And if it was the unit level, you know, analysis of stratification, if you had individual patient-specific data that you could, you know, have a more robust assessment of disparities of care.
Okay, and this is something that you know, we're working on at NQF in general is how to address disparities. So in this particular instance, it's probably not an issue. So we can go ahead and move on.
Okay. So then we're moving to usability. And for this.
Sorry, can I take on disparities? And this is a confusion point on several discussions. Back in section one.
I'm having a real hard time hearing you.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Back on section one, often not just this, but some of the other submissions would cite some disparities, like 1B4, they had to do a summary of data on disparities by population group and then citations for the disparities. Then in this subsequent section, necessarily the extent of it or correlation. So I wasn't sure if people were, as they submitted these, were being consistent in things that were truly a disparity versus something different. So,
right, and that's a good point. If they truly identify disparities, we would like them to address it in either the current measure or how that can be addressed in the future. But you're right, sometimes there was some confusion about what was put under the disparities data. So Certainly, if any of the TAP has questions about that as you're reviewing measures, feel free to bring that up.
Okay. Then we're going to move on, ready to move on to usability.
Mm-hmm.
3A, demonstration that information produced by the measure is meaningful, understandable, and useful to the intended audience for both public reporting and informing quality improvement. Any comments or issues around that? I felt like this definitely met from my perspective.
So did I.
I'm looking on the screen, and it looks like there were some partialies and not at all, unless this what I'm seeing is not the current measure or criteria.
I think you're right. That's 3A there.
Okay.
Carolyn, did you have a question about it? Or
go back. I have some notes here. I think it had to do with the other. It had to do with some questions around the SRI and how it's used by other facilities or not, and how understandable and usable it is by those that don't use it. Of course, after last Friday's final rule, I think more organizations will be utilizing it. And two, I still had the question around the differences, which we've already talked about, around the numerator and the denominator and the time window and comparison across organizations.
Okay.
Okay, so any other concerns or issues from other group members? And hearing none, I'm going to move to 3B. The measure specifications are harmonized with other measures and are applicable to multiple levels and settings. And there again, I had no comments, and it looks like the majority of the group agreed, though there were some partially and one minimally and one not at all. Met. So, group concerns or discussion?
They've been cleared up.
Maybe cleared up by other discussion. So then 3C, review of existing endorsed measures and measure sets, demonstrates that the measure provides a distinctive or additive value to existing NQF measures. And it looks like the group, majority of the group thought that this was completely or partially met. Any comments or discussion that we haven't already, anything we haven't already addressed?
And just to remind you, this is there was one measure identified as a similar measure, but this current measure we're reviewing right now is in fact intended as a replacement of that measure. So it wouldn't actually need any additional value. It's considered a replacement.
Thanks.
Sure.
Thanks for that. Okay, so any other discussion on usability before we move to feasibility? So feasibility, we start with 4A. For clinical measures, required data elements are routinely generated concurrent with and as a byproduct of care processes during delivery. And I have a comment. Again, we've talked about this, so I don't know how much more we want to talk about it, but just an observation that the SIR is not currently generated for all facilities. For those not participating in NHSN, this will be a manual additional calculation, although it sounds like we're moving towards that for all facilities. Any other conversation around that?
No, I think we can move on.
Okay.
We need to probably move on a bit.
Okay, so then 4B, the required elements are available in electronic sources. If the required data are not in existing electronic sources, a credible near-term path to electronic collection by most providers is specified. Any issues there? And then 4C, exclusions should not require additional data sources. I had nothing, and I see that the majority of the group believes this is partially or mostly met. Any conversation?
Pat, this is Helen Burson. I just have a quick question for the CDC folks, if I may.
Sure.
I know there was a lot of discussion early on about thinking about how some of these data integrate with EHRs going forward, and I thought it might be helpful if Dan could just inform the group, because I think it'll come up on the steering committee.
Sure, Helen. I'm happy to do that. So the solution we were describing earlier that enables hospitals that are using commercial infection control systems to report to NHSN through an industry standard file format.
Mm-hmm.
The technical name of that industry standard file format is Health Level 7 Clinical Document Architecture.
Right.
And that is a set of specifications that is a balloted HL7 standard that lends itself for use not only with the infection control surveillance systems, but also with electronic health record systems.
Right.
So our strategy going forward is to take the same implementation guidance that's already in use by the niche product infection control system surveillance vendors and foster its use by the EHR system vendors who we are beginning to engage with right now. And clearly the opportunity to move forward with CMS and with NQF towards use of EHR systems for electronic reporting of the quality measured data is made all the more significant by the dawning of the meaningful use era with the announcement last month of stage one criteria for what constitutes meaningful use of an EHR system. Among those criteria are use of electronic health record systems to report to CMS and to state health departments. So
that's very helpful, and actually we've been quite involved in the whole meaningful use side as well, and so there was a lot of discussion, for example, about could these measures be ready even for 2013 meaningful use, and I guess there was some discussion about the fact that perhaps they weren't quite ready in terms of EHR submission. I knew about the infection control piece. I wasn't sure about the more general EHR submission.
Well, we're confident that, in short order, the same implementation guidance can be used to configure EHR systems and enable the reporting to occur as a result of the primary record of care.
Okay. So it might be helpful to follow up with people like Floyd Eisenberg just to kind of take that to the next level. Great. Thanks.
We have actually been doing that, Helen.
Wonderful.
Working with Floyd on the authoring tool.
Great.
And bringing the CLABSI and soon, hopefully, CAUTI and SSI measure the authoring tool, the Danny Rosenthal.
We're going to go down. I'm sorry, Dan.
We've got up. That's fine. This is great. Thank you. That's all I want to know. Thanks. Sorry for interrupting.
No, it's good, Helen. I'll obviously interrupt any time, but let's go forward. So,
yep.
Okay, Sue?
So 4D, susceptibility to inaccuracies, errors, or unintended consequences. And I don't hear any concerns or issues from the group. Then 4E, demonstration that the data collection strategy can be implemented. Any concerns? And hearing none, I think that takes us to the end of the criteria for the first measure.
There was just one question. I think this actually came from Eric about the cost, which was he had about can they provide an OMB report. Is that something that's needed or something?
Can you say again?
Could an OMB report, could they provide the OMB report?
You mean that what we submit to OMB in terms?
I don't know. That's what Eric had written down, you know, about wanting some information that, you know.
Data collection burden estimates?
Yeah.
We can provide that.
Okay. I guess they want it.
Thanks.
Okay. So we're done with our first measure, right? Any other discussion on this? Any questions? We're not going to be going for an hour through each measure, but I did think it was important because there's going to be other measures like that.
Hi, it's Peter Ann. As the group hits stride, all of this will get faster and faster, but the first one or two are always a little slower, and I thought you did very well at it. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, good. So is there any other questions? Now, my understanding is that we will be getting something later for voting on this, right?
Right.
Okay.
We'll provide you the tools to do your final assessment, your final evaluation of the sub-criteria, and your final recommendation on the measures.
Okay. So we should go on to the AHRQ measure then?
Yeah, and we should check to see if we have anybody from ARC on the line. operator.
And a moment. Is it Patrick Romano?
You're okay. Go ahead.
I'm here.
Hi, Patrick.
Hello. Thank you.
Hi, Patrick. This is Pat Stone, and I don't know if you've been listening. We just went through the CDC measure, and now we're going to go through the PSM 004 measure. Perhaps you could give us a little overview of it?
Yeah. Could I check whether John Bott is on the phone because he's ARC staff?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, this is John Bott. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We can.
Okay, I'm at an airport. Sorry for the poor sound quality.
No problem. Thanks, John.
Okay. One other logistic is I had worked with Andrew Lozana to be on the agenda from 12:40 to 1:40 because that's the only time we were available. And so apologies. I'll at least need to jump off the call at 1:40, and I would ask Patrick, since he's more of a technical expert on the measures, to stay on.
Yeah, sorry about that. We got going a little early and wanted to try to bang out one before we got to your measures, but we ran a little over then.
Okay. Real quickly, in less than 1 minute, this is both of these are risk-adjusted measures using inpatient administrative data, and they take advantage of the present on admission indication. Of course, one measure is adult, one pediatric. Both measures are used in a number of public reports, primarily by states, one by a large healthcare system. They're also used in a number of healthcare systems for quality improvement. And the adult version of the measure will be included in Hospital Compare in the December 2010 report in the form of a composite of patient safety indicators. And that's all I'll note on by way of preface to try to be as responsive as possible to the TAP's question. Thanks.
Okay. So, Carolyn, do you want to go through this measure a bit?
Yeah, I can. I can surely do that. Let's see. So this is central venous catheter bloodstream infections for the adult population, and I think the numerator is one that we're probably very familiar with. But unlike some of the other CLABSI-related measures, this one ties to discharges, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. It will be based on administrative claims. Let me see what else I thought was significant about this. It made it kind of different.
So we probably should go, we'll go probably a little bit faster, but we probably should go through the importance to measure the impact, the criteria, the same as we did before, so people will know what to do. Andrew, can you pull up that other measure, or should we see where we were?
Yep, we'll pull that up.
Okay, so, that's the wrong one.
Okay, I think that should be up now.
Okay, yeah, okay. So, we're at scientific acceptability. You need to just move it back a little bit. Try to do it with myself, but I can't do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So regarding the importance, everybody thought it meant that completely, almost, except there was some partially. Does anybody that said partially, would they like to talk about it? Oh, okay. Then let's go right on to the scientific acceptability, I guess.
I think I was just going to say on the partial, I think some of that may have been tied to the use the denominator being discharged as opposed to tying it directly to advice or a line, and also in terms of being able to get data in a very timely fashion for quality improvement. That's somewhat inhibited by the use of claims data. But on the strength, it is, it does reduce the data collection burden. So
that might come into some of the usability things, but John or Patrick, do you want to talk about how some hospitals are actually using this for quality improvement?
Sure. As John mentioned, this indicator is being used in several states as part of what you might refer to as a passive surveillance kind of approach or a public reporting approach. And it's being used within hospitals, I think, really to complement the NHSN indicator for hospitals that are participating in that program. Because the ARC indicator, as was mentioned, includes all medical surgical discharges in the denominator across the entire acute care facility. So it as a result of that, it is sensitive to how often central lines are used and how long they're kept in. So it keeps the focus on removing central lines as quickly as they're no longer needed as a potential strategy to prevent infections. So this is one difference, and it's a little bit of a philosophical difference, if you will, you know, whether you treat the number of days that a central line is in place as a confounder or whether you treat it as being a causal variable that represents quality. So the CDC's variable takes one approach. We take a somewhat different approach. And I think the two sources of information are potentially complementary.
Okay, great. Thanks. Any other questions for Patrick?
I would just reiterate, this is Sue, sorry, I was on mute before, but that the issue around the denominator not providing an accurate picture, since all patients do not have central lines.
Okay, yeah. And that might come in more as we talk about the actual scientific acceptability. Do you want to go on and talk about that then? Carolyn, do you want to walk us through this?
Are you there, Carolyn?
Sorry, yeah, I just had my mute button on.
Nope.
no problem.
Sorry. Lots of things going on in the background. Okay. In terms of the, let me go over to that page. This, I think, is where we get to the numerator, the 2A. You're talking about 2A.
Yeah, 2A measure specifications and stuff.
I think we talked about that quite a bit. I don't know if there's any further discussion that people want to do. This one also, if I remember correctly, had the time frame issue. If I'm remembering correctly.
It does say the quantity of time can be determined by the user, but it's generally 1 to 3 years.
That is something that we discussed on the last call. Or the last discussion as well. So I don't know if it's the same kind of the thinking for this one because of the incidence is low.
Yeah.
Is that pretty much what we're
that's sort of my thinking, you know. It was the same. Any other questions about this? Either the numerator or the denominator statements? Okay, that's risk adjustment.
Yeah, I think there was a pretty detailed explanation about, you know, the risk adjustments, the reliability thing, as well as the validity testing sections that were in there. Again, the data source for this would be the administrative claims, and there's always, you know, issues around that. Again, it does relieve the data burden for those.
Yeah, and I do have some questions and want to discuss, you know, more extensively specific the validity testing, but when we get to that. Any other questions any discussion about the reliability then? I think it's been well developed. Patrick, you've done a very good job.
Yeah, I thought this was very well written overall.
Well, adding the science behind it. But when we get to 2C validity, that's where I
I do have the most questions about the validity of what it's actually measuring. And, you know, I know that the measure has been recently been changed and it's undergoing validity testing. Again, this is another one that's going undergoing validity testing. But, you know, it hasn't. Patrick, do you want to discuss any of the validity testing of what you know now and what you're going to know soon?
I'm sure, and I'll be honest that this is, you know, the key limitation of the indicator as it's currently used. So, the original definition of this indicator used two IC9CM codes that were somewhat vague and captured not just central line-associated bloodstream infections, but other nosocomial infections as well. And so as part of an effort to improve the surveillance capabilities as well as implement payment policies, the CDC and CMS promoted a new IC9CM code that was adopted a couple of years ago now, which is specifically limited to central line associated bloodstream infections. That's the 999.31 code. Mm-hmm. So the data that we have on validity, really sensitivity and predictive value, comes from studies based on the prior broader set of codes. So that's why the positive predictive value was in the 50% range. Now, we found that a large chunk of those false positives were due to infections that were actually present on admission, and so now that's been incorporated into the indicator specification. And then the other large chunk were due to other nosocomial infections that weren't central line-associated bloodstream infections. So our thinking is that now that those other infections have been carved out and a specific code has been created for central line-associated infections, that should take care of nearly all of those false positives that were previously identified.
What about false negatives?
I'm sorry?
What about false negatives?
Right. So false negatives are definitely a critical issue. And at this point, we have a couple of projects underway to gather evidence about the number of false negatives. We've been working with the University Health System Consortium on planning one project, and we have another project that's in the field right now at a volunteer set of hospitals across the country, but we don't have any data yet to share from those facilities. So at this point, I'm afraid we really don't have any solid evidence on the sensitivity or the false negative rate for this indicator.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions about that? Want any further discussion? Okay. So then let's go on to the exclusions. Carolyn, did you have anything or anybody or Sue or anybody else about the exclusions?
I think in this submission they did a very nice job of outlining what the submissions were and then actually putting in the citations for evidence to support those. I didn't personally go in and check these articles to make sure they matched up, but I thought that was, you know, really in keeping with the with helping substantiate their position.
Absolutely. Okay, risk adjustment. Does anybody have questions or? Risk adjustment? I had no questions, you know, regarding the risk adjustment methods here. If anybody else did? After risk adjustment, there's identification of meaningful differences in performance. Anybody have any questions regarding that? I think we sort of talked about that already, how some hospitals are using that. Then comparability of multiple data sources. Is it possible to use, I mean, what's in here is they talks about the using the NIST and the SID databases, but that's not what the hospitals are using. I guess that's just saying that if you did that, what would your performance be? Is that the case? Because hospitals themselves would not be doing that, right?
Well, hospitals have access to the data that go into the NIST or SID because they obviously originate from the hospitals. They're submitted to state health data agencies, and then from the state health data agencies, they go to AHRQ and into the NIST and SID data sets. So we use the NIST and SID data sets for testing purposes. I think for public reporting purposes, most entities would use the data that come from state health data agencies.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, hospitals can use their own data, but it's all the same data.
Sure.
That gets tracked through the system.
Yeah. Any questions about the multiple data sources?
I would point out one thing, which is that as hospitals have become more complete in coding their data, they often need more than 9 diagnosis fields in order to document complications such as central line-associated bloodstream infections. So this is a limitation of using the existing CMS data, frankly, for this indicator.
Mm-hmm.
So we would certainly encourage users, including hospitals, to access all of the data fields that are available to them, which is typically in the range of 20 to 30.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that will substantially improve the sensitivity of the indicator doing so.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you get down to the coding practices of the individual hospital. I mean, if they code well, it will. Any other questions or comments or discussion about the data sources? About disparities in care?
I just had one question about the disparities in care, and it has to do with that first sentence under 2H1, that stratification to identify disparities is encouraged but not mandatory. Does that impact at all any of the results?
Karen or Andrew, do you want to? I mean, I wouldn't think so. Does anybody want to speak about that?
Go ahead.
This is Karen. Are you asking about the evaluation criteria?
Yeah, in 2H, I was referring to the in 2H1. Like, it looks like in some of the references there was stratification that took place, but I couldn't tell. I mean, from the statement, it looks like it would be encouraged, but not necessarily something mandatory. And so I just didn't know the impact.
Right. Okay. So the measure developer is saying that it's encouraged but not mandatory. And our criteria is if disparities have been identified to see if there's any information about the measure specifications that are laid out in terms of being able to do that, or if there's some rationale of why it's not necessary or not feasible. To be honest, most of the measures we're currently getting submitted do not necessarily have specifications to do that, but it sounds like this in this particular instance, the measure steward said that would be possible. So it's not a big issue.
Okay, so usability, meaningful, understandable, and usable information. Does anyone want to speak to that or have questions about what they wrote? It is being used, has been used by some states. It's been used by hospitals we've talked about. I guess this is one of the real nice things is that it's easy to use. That's more feasibility, I guess. Testing of interpretability. I really didn't have any questions about this. I don't know. I don't want, if anybody does have any questions, please. Okay. Go on into relation to other NQF measures. It does cite the NQF 0139, which is the old CDC measure. And I guess it would be in relation to this new measure that's being proposed, as well as the next one that we're going to review, the pediatric one. And the harmonization, this is replacing the old HRQ measure that has been endorsed. Is that true?
I don't know if we have John, if John Bott is still on the line. He might be able to answer that better. I don't know that this measure actually was intended to replace any previous measure.
Was the previous PSI 7 endorsed? Were all the PSIs endorsed?
Okay, so the previous PSI 7 was endorsed only as a component of the patient safety composite.
Okay.
So the patient safety composite was endorsed, and that endorsement was based partially on the fact that this indicator shares a lot of variance with other indicators that are part of the same composite. So this new definition, which is based on the more specific 999.31 code, is intended as a replacement of the previous. So it has the same number, PSI 7.
Okay. So would that, this is, I mean, something for the NQF folks, if this measure was endorsed or something, you know, there'd have to be a change to the PSI composite measure.
Yeah. Karen, are you still on? Do you have any insight into that?
Pat, would you state that again?
Well, if because this met the previous PSI 7 was endorsed through the composite measure,
right?
There'd have to be a change to the composite measure.
Well, I don't know that this is any different from that. Patrick, it's basically the same, right? Or is it
different?
Well, the definition was updated based on the change in the ICD-9-CM coding.
Oh, okay.
With that change in coding, we now have a new specification of the indicator. So we felt that it was appropriate to bring the indicator now to this TAP for consideration for independent endorsement. But it would automatically modify the composite definition as well.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Yeah, so that's if this measure, either way, it sounds like as part of the composite or as an independent measure, it would have implications for updating the composite, that they would follow through and do that.
Okay. So then any other distinctive or additive value, does anybody want to talk about that? Or competing measures. I think we've sort of gone over this already.
The only issue, Pat, this is Helen, is that you just discussed the CDC measure, and then you've got this one here. And, you know, obviously a claims-based measure can coexist in the portfolio with one that's not claims-based, but we would at least like the TAP to discuss if there's any harmonization concerns if you haven't already done so.
Okay, so we need to discuss these two measures.
Sue, my comment is more under feasibility, but also relates to this. I think that I would just raise the issue of this measure as compared to the NHSN measure in terms of the in unintended consequence of data burden, and for, you know, legislated reporting of CLABSI, it's all NHSN. And I think that where there's legislated reporting and we're looking to CMS to do the same, that's what NQF should also defer to and not have additional measures in order to address that. I just raise that as a concern.
Yeah, and, you know, my thinking is if they are intended to measure the same phenomenon, I'm not sure that the evidence is there that they do. You know, we don't have that validity testing yet. And so there are two, the development in my mind of what I've read, and, you know, Patrick could certainly tell me whether we're right or I'm right or not, but that the PSIs were developed as sort of a screening measure, but not as clinical indicators. And so they're so different that, you know, although they're, you know, sort of conceptually the same, they're very, very different. And what gets in a discharge, you know, a discharge diagnosis and procedure codes are very different from any clinical, they shouldn't be, I mean, you know, but at this point we don't have the sort of congruence across them. And so it's difficult for me to think of them exactly as the same. I don't know if other people struggle with that. Could somebody else speak to that?
Well, I think that's completely correct because of the data source and the passive surveillance, which is something we need to look more towards as we're automating surveillance, but not from a mandatory perspective, I think. And it is apples and oranges when you're looking at the specific definitions of NHSN.
Was anybody, you know, there's been a few people that have been quite quiet on this call. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to say about this? I think it's sort of an important point.
Well, this is Jan Allison, and just in defense of myself for being quiet, I'm really, because I'm from the ambulatory surgery industry, I don't feel as expert as you guys that are already experienced with these hospital situations and measures. I've, you know, a lot of this stuff was really some of my best guess based on what I read, and definitely these discussions are really helping offer a lot more clarity and understanding for me. So I'm just soaking it in.
Okay. Anybody else have any thoughts about this?
I think this is Carolyn. I know I haven't been quiet. I probably wish I would be quiet. You know, I think it gets back in a large part due to the looking at it based on total discharges versus those that are actually receiving some type of, that actually have some type of central line. And, you know, it's two totally different ways of looking at it, as somebody pointed out earlier. So I don't know if it can be considered additive. I would say it may be, you know, the precision may be less, but I did discuss this with some of my friends from APIC and IDSA, and they kind of agreed the same.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a subcategory of CLABSI, where we're trying to develop more automation of surveillance. This would be a good starting point because it's not going to be as accurate, but it does reduce the surveillance burden. But it is not the same as what we're looking at with the NHSN measure, for sure.
Yeah. Anybody else have any thoughts on this? Brian or Juan or?
This is Patrick. Could I say something?
Sure, of course.
I think this is a sensitive issue, and I don't think there's any intent to set up a competition here between AHRQ's approach and the CDC's approach. They are two different approaches. I don't know if anybody from CDC is still on the call, but we certainly defer to the NHSN numerator definition as really being the gold standard, is being the what's accepted by infection control and epidemiology professionals. I think the issue is that you know, we have about half of these infections that are now occurring outside intensive care units, and we have a major interest in a variety of approaches to reducing these infections from the patient-centered perspective, including in some cases not using central lines when they're not necessary, or getting them out early when they can be removed safely. So I think that's why the ARC indicator may still have a role, even though we recognize that the NHSN definition of these events is a more precise and scientifically superior definition.
And this is Dan Pollack at CDC. Thank you, Patrick. We appreciate the sentiments you've just expressed, and we don't see it as a competition either. We think that essentially a decision's been made about which of these measures to use for public reporting, with 21 states using the NHSN measure and with CMS going forward as part of the annual payment update system with the NHSN measure. And NHSN is extensible outside of the intensive care unit. And as we do migrate to electronic reporting from EHR systems and leverage what is available electronically in the way of laboratory results data, which are pivotal for CLABSIs, we think that it will make a whole lot more sense for public reporting purposes to enlarge the scope. We're not quite there yet, but it's we're knocking on the door.
Okay, so let me just sort of summarize this. There are definitely two different measures. The ARC measure has some uses in larger populations or, you know, full hospitals, but uses it, refers to the CDC measure as a gold standard to really have the clinical basis. I think that's the best I can do, Helen, regarding harmonization.
Okay. I was just trying to at least get a sense from, you know, and perhaps at the end of the discussion, Karen can walk you through the way we would, you know, if we even need to get to the next level or save that for the steering committee, the discussion of, you know, if they both are, in fact, highly rated by the TAF and the steering committee and both go forward, we probably need to have some commentary along the lines of what we just discussed.
Yeah, no, I think it's very important, you know, and so I won't reiterate what I just said.
Yeah, but it sounds like the definitions are at least harmonized to the extent they can be with differing data sources, which is helpful.
Yeah. Okay. That actually probably gets a little bit at the distinctive and additive value. Any further discussion on that? And competing measures? I mean, those would be the competing measures. Okay, feasibility. The data, these are used as discharge data. It is electronic. I really didn't have any issues regarding feasibility.
This is Sue. I shared my concern, which I still have, which is it is electronic, but it would still require somebody to collect it and submit it. And there is already a data stream for submission of CLABSI data through NHSN that I think we need to be good stewards of existing resources in deferring to what is already there.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, this is a programmer that would be needed in the, you know, in the hospital. And, you know, susceptibility to inaccuracies or errors, this would have the same as anything that uses discharge records, which there are a lot that uses diagnosis records. And then data collection strategy implementation. I think that's the feasibility issues are there. I mean, that it's a programmer. Okay. Any other thing? Does anybody have any questions or want to think about this anymore? Say anymore?
Just to reiterate that a programmer is an additional resource is not small, but not that you intended to.
Yeah, no.
Just want to reiterate.
Let me clarify that there is no additional resource that's required here. I'm a little confused about that statement because this is an existing data stream that's already coming from hospitals to their state health data agencies. So there's no additional programmer that's required?
Don't you need somebody to be able to run it?
This isn't currently reported in California anyway. I'm not sure about other states.
Well, the data are collected, and so then there's the software is available for free on the AHRQ website, and an agency or entity that wants to analyze the data can download the software, but the data are already collected.
Yes. On a voluntary basis, right? So some medical centers do that, but
no,
not all.
It's
not.
It's in 43 states.
Yeah, but right. But
and
not
all 95% of the U.S. population is covered.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I haven't seen it from Kaiser Medical Centers.
Right. This is Karen, and I think the distinction is that the data are provided by hospitals. It's what you may be seeing is the differences in whether states choose to publicly report that data, but the data, as Patrick said, is still being collected for all of those states, and the majority of hospitals are included in that data collection. But there's definitely differences in, right now in terms of whether states choose to publicly report all of that data or any of that data.
Any more discussion regarding that? Okay, I think we're on to our third measure, which I do think we're going to get a little more quick here, because this is going to be the CVC-related bloodstream infections in pediatrics. And, Patrick, do you want to just give us a brief overview of how this is different than the previous adult one?
It's really not very much different. It's a pediatric version of the adult measure. The major difference is that some of the exclusion criteria are specified a bit differently to focus on the pediatric population, and in particular the risk adjustment is quite different because the risk adjustment is based on pediatric comorbidities rather than typically adult comorbidities.
Okay. So just in the overview, I'd like to ask a few questions about this. And this is me being my naive self again. You know, the difference between a 17-year-old and a 19-year-old, I was surprised at up to 18-year-olds. I mean, I see the difference of, you know, in NICU, of which the NICUs are not in here, right? NICU babies?
That's correct. Newborns are not in here.
Newborns are not. So I was surprised to see it. I mean, I guess maybe this is general pediatrics. You just do it up to 18. You know, I just sort of thought I didn't think they were that different from adults. I'm surprised that it was done based on an adult age limit of drinking and driving, whatever, or voting. Do you know why they picked 18?
Well, admittedly, it is a bit arbitrary. It's just that's the conventional age at which we separate adults and children. But I think that from the clinical perspective, yes, you could make the argument that 14 or 15 might be a more appropriate cutoff. But this is the cutoff that has been applied across all of our AHRQ indicators as well as other stewards indicators.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah, okay. So, see, and that's my naivete. I don't know what they've been doing in the pediatrics. Let's see. Kathleen, do you want to walk us through this really quickly, where you see differences, or would you mind? Kathleen, you here?
Are you on mute, Kathleen?
And Dr. Squire's line did disconnect quite some time ago.
Okay.
Okay.
Sue, do you want to do it or you want me to?
No, I'm happy to. I think that do you want me to go through measure criteria by criteria?
Why don't we go by the main topics? I don't think we, you know, I think we.
Okay. So let's start with importance to measure. Are there any concerns or issues?
No.
Okay, then we have scientific acceptability.
Okay.
And I think a lot of this probably was already covered in the prior conversation. How about usability?
The only thing, I mean, do we need to talk about the difference in risk adjustment? Probably not. That's scientific. Probably not. I mean, I think the CDC does a real good, I mean, the AHRQ does a good job on the risk adjustment.
And then last is feasibility.
I really feel that's the same as what we just discussed for the others.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay. Well, there we go. We got through three. Anything else on this? Okay, where are we now?
The county.
Oh, yeah. So, well, first, I guess I should ask if the measure developers have any closing comments that they'd like to give.
I was wondering, I identified the link for the reporting of this indicator in California, so I can share that link with NQF staff.
Okay. Yeah, we'd be glad to distribute that.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
All right. Well, if we've got no other comments from the measure developers or any of the TAP members, at this point we would open it up for public or member comment. So if the operator is on the line, could you let us know if there's anybody who wants to speak, any member of the public?
And once again, it is star one for your questions or comments. And we do have a question or comment from Rita Gallagher with the ANA.
I'd just like to thank you for the thoughtful discussion. It was greatly appreciated, and the American Nurses Association has no further comments.
All right. Thanks, Rita.
And I have no questions or comments at this time, sir.
All right. Great. Well, then I guess we can go ahead and move on to the CAUTI measure. And is Dan still on?
Hi. No, Dan isn't on. He asked me, this is Kathy Allen Bridson, one of the IPs here, to present the opening remarks for the CAUTI measure.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you for the opportunity. We'll be addressing patient safety measure 003-10, the National Healthcare Safety Network's catheter-associated urinary tract or CAUTI outcome measure. Several of these points are similar to what was discussed with the CLABSI, but the proposal incorporates the terminology, case criteria, and metrics for CAUTI incidents utilized in the CDC's NHSN. And the NHSN criteria are the most widely used HAI criteria in the U.S. and are backed by a long-standing track record of success beginning in 1995 with the National Nosocomial Surveillance System, or NIS, which is the predecessor to the NHSN. We currently have over 2,700 facilities utilizing NHSN for HAI surveillance, with 21 states utilizing NHSN as a reporting system for mandatory HAI reporting. Two of these states utilize the system for mandatory CAUTI reporting. Presently, this represents 358 facilities, and this number is expected to continue to grow as CAUTI prevention efforts increase as a result of the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services labeling of CAUTIs as preventable and now non-reimbursable events. At least one multi-state CAUTI prevention consortium has begun to utilize the NHSN for their reporting needs. The measure requires enumeration of numerator events within each intensive care unit, excluding neonatal ICUs, meeting the NHSN criteria for healthcare-associated CAUTI within a defined time period. Patients must have had an indwelling urinary catheter in the 48 hours previous to the onset of infection. NICUs are excluded from participation because indwelling urinary catheters are seldom, if ever, used in these locations. enumeration of the total number of indwelling urinary catheter days for each location during the same time period is required. It has been identified from the considerable NHSN and NIST aggregate data that the incidence of cowdies varies between location types, suggesting that underlying differences exist between these patient populations, and therefore stratification on this variable represents an important means to identify significant differences from aggregate cowdy rates and to target prevention efforts and is required. This measure calls for the calculation of a cowdy standard and standardized infection ratio, or SIR, to compare cowdy incidence in the involved locations with nationally aggregated incidence rates in comparable locations using the NHSN's robust database. The SIR is an adaptation of the standardized mortality ratio, or SMR, which is a widely recognized method of measurement within public health. Compares the total number of cowdy actually observed to the number of cowdies expected to occur in a location of like type and size in ratio form using the NHSN database as a standard population. Several states have reported HAIs publicly using the SIR. The advantages of the SIR include that it provides a single measure that the public can understand. In other words, that one is the expected ratio, and any number higher than this is more than is expected, and any number lower is lower than expected, and the difference is directly proportional. In other words, that a ratio of 2 indicates an incidence twice as frequent as expected. Likewise, performance improvement leaders should find the measure easy to communicate to and motivate improvement partners. Additionally, the SIR can be calculated at a variety of levels from the individual location type to a total facility SIR. The measurement time frame required for meaningful data, as Dan mentioned, may vary by location or facility, and based on the national aggregate data, a minimum number of indwelling catheter days will be necessary to expect at least one cowdy. The length of time this will require in each location will depend on the number of patient beds and the patient census. Anything less than at least one expected cowdy will produce data that may be difficult to understand. For reliability, the NHSN and NIST systems have a proven track record of over 25 years in the requirement of reliable HAI surveillance, and the use of the NHSN measurement has been endorsed in previous NQF considerations. Ongoing user training and support lend to the reliability of the data collected. Finally, studies completed in the 1990s validated the NHSN's case criteria and methodologies. Current validation studies are being supported by the ERA funds to develop HAI surveillance and prevention programs in the states, and audit studies to correct numerator issues are undertaken in cooperation with individual facilities. So thank you for the opportunity, and we're willing to answer any questions that you have.
Thanks. Let's see, who sort of reviewed this? It was Sue, Carolyn, and Kathleen. Somebody want to bring us through this?
So, Carolyn, you want to do this one?
Sure, I can do this one. This one is very similar in a lot of ways to one of the other ones that we had considered earlier in the day. And so a lot of the strengths and weaknesses that maybe we identified in the evaluation process have in some part already been discussed. I think when you look at the discrepancy around the importance to measure and report, not everyone rated that as highly, and looking at the comments, that may have to do with this measure focuses on CAUTI in the ICU, whereas I noted that some of the folks believed that it's a problem beyond just the ICU, and maybe there are other areas of the hospital that have equal opportunity for improvement. That being said, it could potentially be, you know, an additive measure to things that were already being considered. But there was some kind of discrepancy when you look across around the importance to measure piece. I think there was agreement that there was obviously that this is an issue because of the prevalence and, that it occurs. But focusing solely on the ICU, I think, may have been one of the questions that people have.
I think another question, this is Sue, when we're talking about the importance to measure, it, and you touched on this a bit, but it's important to speak in terms of comparability of one HAI type to another. And we're looking at cowdy I believe that the data represents not just ICU deaths and mortality, but the spectrum of the continuum of care. And if you look just in the ICU and compare the morbidity and mortality to the other types of HAI, I think that it would be hard to make a compelling case until we can automate surveillance to make this a measure that we would need to add to the already large surveillance burden.
You mean outside of the ICU?
Anywhere. But, yeah, especially outside. Unless we're able to automate and unless there's some, you know, compromise in the measure that permits the automation, which would reduce the quality of the data.
So you're worried about sort of a feasibility issue. You're worried about the ability of people to do this surveillance.
Absolutely. It's a ground-level concern.
Yeah.
It's not a big-picture concern. It's a ground-level practical concern that I just want to raise.
Yeah. But I know people are worried about that. Okay. But I think that our point, you know, that sort of feasibility issue, I think we have to go with what they say and, you know, what it costs. But we need to think about on the scientific part for right now. But maybe not, because you're saying importance, because it's not as important of a measure.
Well, of course all HAIs are important, but when I think you need to look, given the existing resources, it becomes even more important to look comparatively one HAI type to another. And also the data burden, which, you know, is estimated here, but what I hear from other local medical centers is 1.5 FTEs additional to collect this data measure, even in just ICUs. And, you know, to permit additional less rigorous definitions might be one way to go, so that the data could be collected from administrative data by other than IPs.
Okay. We don't have that measure before us, so I think we got to stick with this measure. Okay. Anything else? Does anybody have any other discussion on this? As far as importance, just one other thing about importance. HHS has identified this as one of their tier one infections because of the prevalence.
Globally, not just related to the ICU.
Yeah, not just related to the ICU. You're right.
This is Teresa Horan. If I might say something about that, the measures that were originally submitted to the nursing sensitive set and the hospital infection hospital set were based on the NIST system, which focused on ICUs. So the extension to these focusing on ICUs comes out of, I think, that and the public reporting in state health department by states that it was trying not to overburden the hospital community with reporting. And so the limitation there to intensive care units, by and large, for most states. But as Dan said earlier, for CLABSIs, the NHSN system itself is open to and does collect data. We do collect data from any type of patient care location, patient care area. So this measure, neither the CLABSI nor the CAUDI measure has to be restricted to ICUs if there's a need to open it up.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly capable of handling that.
Yeah, but it's a different measure, you know, and that gets endorsed. And so, I mean, in some ways, the TAP is limited by what's here.
Exactly, but since that keeps coming up,
yeah,
the limitation, it's... It doesn't have to be if there's a need for it to be different.
Yeah, Yeah. Okay. And by I think Sue's remark is that it might be overburdensome anyway. So, you know, to open it up would be even probably more overburdensome. Okay. To go on, Carolyn, where are we now?
We're on the measure specifications. And this one, again, is similar to what we saw with the CLABSI. I think one of the things that we discussed at length was that whole thing around the time window. This one, too, has that period greater than monthly, but I think we've covered that quite well. And then the denominator has to do with the SIR, which I believe we have also, I think we've also talked about that.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Right. There were some exclusions cited in 2A9 that later when the exclusions come up, I didn't see, like we saw with the AHRQ, the list of citations to explain why those should be. But point that out now since it shows up places.
Yeah, but they seem to... Certainly the suprapubic and the condoms sort of, I don't think we need to, and I guess in and out catheterizations, because you don't have a catheter day. I do wonder if you're going to get more infections with in and outs, but that's a clinical problem that.
Yeah, that was a question I had. I mean, I've, yeah, so.
An unintended consequence, you know, potential unintended consequence, but I don't know.
This is Teresa again. In our experience in the NIST system where we did focus surveillance on all HAIs in intensive care units, we did not see, we saw very, very few non-catheter-associated urinary tract infections. So those in-and-out type of catheterizations would have shown up in those non-indwelling catheter patients, and there were just very few of them.
And I think that there is clinical data. There's evidence to support the in and out as an intervention.
Yeah.
As a discrete prevention effort.
I agree.
Okay. So maybe that could have been something that could have been added to the denominator exclusion details. You know, well, that's really, I don't know if it really goes there, but it's nice to know that that there is some evidence on that. Anything else on the scientific acceptability? I think it's so close to what we've been going over.
Yes. Yeah, I think the reliability testing is probably pretty close to verbatim, except for different the analytic method, I think. Is very similar to what we saw before with CLABSI, except it applies to the CODI.
Yeah.
Same with the validity testing, and the validity testing for the SIR, it looks like it's starting in July.
Yep. Any questions, any comment about that discussion? The usability? Did I skip too much? I think usability. Anything on that?
I think this may be where the harmonization piece comes up. There were some similar measures that were identified, but there really wasn't any discussion around the potential of harmonizing, even though it wasn't necessarily cited. I think under the distinctive or additive value, I guess the potential is that this is, you know, this measure is a way to look at a subset of the entire inpatient population. If folks want to look at it that way.
Yeah, there's a. They do cite this one measure that I think is going to be reviewed tomorrow. Is that true, Andrew, that we're reviewing PSM 007 tomorrow?
Yes, that's right. We'll be reviewing that one first thing tomorrow.
Okay, because I think they're really close.
Yeah.
And I think that harmonization regarding those measures needs to be well thought out.
So, yeah, we can just, I guess, so try to keep some of the discussion we've had in mind today on this UTI measure. Try to sort of keep that in the back of your head when we discuss the next one tomorrow, and we can talk a bit about the harmonization issues then as well.
Okay. Anything else on that part? Should we go into feasibility? Any issues there?
Well, I think, although sounding like a broken record, the data burden for states for which this is not mandatory, included in the mandatory reporting metrics at this time.
Yeah, and this is another one that maybe the OMB report needs to be part of it or something. I don't know. It's probably all the same OMB report.
And if we get that from Dr. Romano, we'll certainly send it on to the rest of the TAP.
That would be from Dr. Pollock.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. Okay. So any more discussion about this? This one went quick.
Pat, just to the clarification about the OMB, the burden estimate, we did put that in to both the CLABSI and the COWDI directly out of the OMB package. So I'm not sure there's going to be a lot more in the OMB package, although we're happy to send it.
It was just something that Eric said.
Okay.
I believe that that's what's written there, so I don't know if they want the documentation. Or Eric, do you want the documentation?
I don't think he's actually on the call today. So,
oh, okay.
But I'll ask him about it and see what he was thinking there, and we may request that.
All right. So I think we're done with that. Is there any more discussion about it? Is there any more where are we on our agenda then, Andrew?
In that case, we would once again, I guess, ask the measure developers if they have any closing comments, and if not, we'll move on to the public and member comment period. So do we have any comments from the measure developers?
No, we have provided all that we can at this point.
Okay, great. Operator, do we have any public comments?
Once again, that is star one. And no one has signaled at this time, sir.
Okay, great. So then, does anybody else have any closing thoughts here? Any thoughts about how this first meeting's gone? Any recommendations for the leaders tomorrow? How we can move through the measures?
This is Peter Angood, and from my perspective, actually, I think the TAP members have done very well today. This is complex sets of measures that we had potential for conflicts with two different bidding organizations with similar types of measures. You moved through that nicely. You've gone through the criteria quite nicely. So from my perspective, I think you should feel good that you've got some process experience now and feel comfortable.
Thank you, Peter.
Agreed. Well, with that, then, we will move on to day two tomorrow. I think we can close off early a little bit today. Remember to take a look again at the online survey tool, the SurveyMonkey, that we sent out in the email. And please, if you haven't already entered your evaluations online, especially for those measures that we'll be considering tomorrow, please do that. As soon as you can, and preferably by as early tomorrow morning as you can. And I think that's it then. Thanks, everybody, for coming on, and we will speak to you again tomorrow at 12 o'clock.